Hi, friends, and welcome to the Plus Mommy Podcast. I'm your host, Jen McClellan, and here we explore plus-size pregnancy, motherhood, and body love. From bumps to bellies, we talk about it all. Now, let's get started. Hi, friends. Today, we are joined by an incredible midwife, Mimi Siriki. And Mimi is from Colorado Springs, and I have had the absolute honor to connect with her in her work in the birth world in Colorado. And I'm so, so honored to have Mimi with us today on the podcast to address something that we need to be talking about far more often, and that is supporting Black families during prenatal care and forever and ever more. So welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Jen.
Thank you for being here. I've been so enjoying watching. You are on a big mission to raise awareness, and you have started Womb Cycle, and you are literally cycling to raise awareness. And I've watched your videos and sending you hearts and love, and I know you want to raise more awareness. And I'm like, please, 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 I'd be honored to have you on the show. So thank you for coming on board.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you for just recognizing that the work is indefinite, right? Like it's a continuum. And so that's kind of the foundation of how I thought about Womb Cycle and how that came to fruition.
Yeah. Why don't we talk about what is the work? I know the work.
Yeah.
But what is the conversation that we're having today?
Yeah. So the basis of the conversation for today is to bring awareness to Black infant mortality and what we can do as consumers, as just people who care about people, to help elevate this conversation more. The conversation is not new. The data is not new. This is something that we have talked about for a very long time, for well over 20 years. So there's lots of evidence to support the conversation that we're having today. But in short, Black babies specifically are at a higher risk of death between their delivery and the first 12 months of life. And that is extraordinarily difficult for some people to palate. Like, what do you mean? You know, like there's death, you know, babies do die, and that's correct. But the problem is that these babies die at a significantly higher rate. And some of the things that have been identified through public health are things are preventable. We can prevent some of these deaths from happening when it's environmentally, when there are social determinants of health involved. And so that's where we come in. That's where we have these conversations.
Yeah. No, so incredibly important. And I know that you've been doing this work as a birth professional for a very long time. And I've been doing it for over 10 years now. And it's important. And I'm thankful that finally a word that should have been used 20 years ago when we started talking about this is being used today. And that is racism. Racism is playing a role in Black babies and Black parents dying during postpartum and birth. And now I was even just reading ACOG's newer guidelines on pregnancy for people in larger bodies. And they're saying that, you know, racism is playing a role in our outcomes. And good, we need to be having this conversation because people are dying and harm is occurring. Right. It's not open for discussion. This is what's happening. And what can we do to raise awareness and to change it? Because as I've talked to many incredible advocates and even had Jessica Wilson on the show recently, when we improve care for Black people, we improve care for all, for everybody. So this is what we need to be talking about. And I am so thankful that you do the work and, but you also put your body on the line for this work in so many beautiful ways as a professional, but and then also physically. So what is Womb Cycle and what is your goals and what you're doing and literally sweating for the cause?
Literally sweating for the cause. So Womb Cycle, to give you a little context, it started out as an idea. I knew very early on where I wanted to be with my career. And so I had played around with, you know, different ways to connect with community. And something that resonates in my head is the greatest good for the greater number of people. Like it plays in my head over and over and over again. And as a community midwife, I have the ability to help families here in Colorado and a very small number. And so I said, how can I manifest this thought of the greatest good for the greatest number of people? And the manifestation came, you know, why don't you just like ride your bike down some states or through some states, you know, and bring awareness. And as time went on, that vision, it changed. As I had conversations, as I checked in with my own losses, as I dug a little deeper beyond the surface of statistical data, I began to recognize, and during this time now, I've been riding my bike both indoors and outdoors for 3 years now.
Yeah, I was going to ask, are you like a cyclist that's been doing this your whole life? And you're like, let's do this. You're like, yeah. You just said 3 years. That is not a very long time.
It is not a very long time. It started where me and my girlfriend were talking and we're like, let's get Pelotons. And then it was like, well, that's pretty expensive. You know, like, who has that kind of money just lying around? And so it was a wish list for a birthday or Christmas gift for me. So my children and my husband came together and purchased this Peloton for me. And that's how it started. So I've only been on the bike for 3 years. And through riding the bike, there was an evolution of my thought process. And so something I just recently shared on Facebook, just I think yesterday or a couple of days ago, was the connection between myself, my physical being, my mental being, and my bike. I have to trust my bike, right? I have to trust my body, right? And your body has these keen awarenesses, like that you really don't key in on in everyday life. Even as a person who likes to be outdoors, this heightened sense of awareness is completely different when you're on the bike. And then there's that dose of oxytocin sprinkled with nostalgia.
Oh,
thinking about your childhood and how you would get on the bikes in the summertime. And, you know, I grew up in the 80s, so bikes was tearing.
Yeah, me too.
Right? Like just tearing up the streets with your bike and then hearing how the bike sounded when they hit the ground, when you ran inside to get something to eat or go drink from the hose. Like,
yes. You know what I'm saying? Or the street lights are coming on, so you don't get home, so you don't get in trouble with mom.
Yes. So there's this oxytocin, this feel good and this nostalgia. And all of this connected when I went from riding indoors and outdoors. And what that did for me and my vision for Womb Cycle, that's how I came up with the name Womb Cycle, because I began to notice the alignment of my own physiological menstrual cycle changing and altering with me being on this bicycle. And I thought, this is fascinating because I've never been on the bike to lose weight. Never. Never have I been on the bike for weight loss. And so there were these physiological changes that were happening in my body. As I began to grow into this little baby cyclist, I began to take new steps. One of them was like clipping into my bike, right? Like I have cleats that clip onto pedals. I didn't even know that existed. But what it meant for me and what it represented is getting into the thick of these states that we're riding through, recognizing that these states, you know, we're riding from North Carolina to New Orleans, and recognizing that these were also port of entry states for the, you know, for the Middle Passage. Yeah. And there's no irony there to why disparities continue to be something that we are trying to mitigate in these states. And it really solidified my why. So being on the bike is what created, that's how the creative thought of Womb Cycle came about. The womb is a cycle. It's a turning, right? It is the most powerful muscle in the human body. And when I am on my bike and those revolutions and the power in my legs reminds me constantly of, wow, my womb does this day in, day out. So that's where Womb Cycle came from. And then the project itself just became more than I want to bring awareness. It has morphed into, we're going to ride our bikes on these streets. We're going to engage with, you know, representatives for those states, and we're going to fundraise. And we're going to take that fundraising money that we receive in that state, and we're going to give it to those community midwives because they're the ones that are doing the work.
Yeah.
You know,
as a community midwife who's on the ground doing the work.
Right. They're doing the work, and we recognize how important it is to remove barriers to accessible funding, right? Mm-hmm. Like if we can fundraise $10,000 for the state of North Carolina to go to their community midwives, for the average person, they may think that's not a lot of money. But for a community midwife, that means that they can buy more instruments. That means that they can do more pro bono work for families who can't afford to pay out of pocket if they have a high deductible or if they don't have any insurance. It allows them to do the work without the stress. And there's toxic stress that comes along with just being a community midwife.
Yeah.
And finances is one of them. So it went from, you know, we're going to raise awareness because this is a really cool thing, to we're going to be intentional. We are going to have actionable items that can be measurable. And our ultimate goal is, this is the inaugural year, but this will be as big as any other Susan Breast Cancer Awareness Walk. That's my vision, is that this will play out in multiple states and support multiple community midwives for years
to come. Oh my gosh, there's so much I want to unpack of all the amazingness you just said. Like, first of all, the connection with the womb and all of that was so incredibly powerful and beautiful too. And then taking it to this whole other level of intention. And you mentioned barriers with access to funding. And I was thinking, you know, as someone, I have a nonprofit background, grant writing is a skill. Mm-hmm. Grant writing is a full-time job. And not everyone can do it or have the time for it or even know where to begin. So yeah, there are so many community organizations that need access to funding, or just community workers, right? Like you said, like midwives on the ground doing the work. They don't have the time to do grant writing, even if they have the skill or the knowledge or the know-how, but there's a definite need as well. So that really hit me, and that stood out of like, you're right. Like, so often we make donations, but we make donations to organizations that often have grant writers where there are individuals that also really need that support. I think of, you know, giving back to Black community members, especially birth workers. That's something that I like to do every year, and picking doulas or people who want to become apprentice midwives and helping to increase the access. So I hope that's a note that people can think about when we want to make donations throughout the year, or at the end of the year when we make so many donations, to think about who are those community people and who are those people working to help raise awareness and create change for, you know, Black maternal mortality rates. Right. And womb cycle should be at the top of that list. So you're going to be at the top of my list too when I make donations this year, because I know when we started, I'm like, I know you have this going on, you know, coming up this year, but the show is evergreen. And I know that your work and this important topic is evergreen. And at some point, I don't want it to be, right? Like, at some point, it shouldn't be.
Right.
But it is, and it will continue to be. So, yeah. Oh, my gosh. So powerful. And what is the date of it for 2023? Just for listeners now. Yeah. And immediately, and we'll share more at the end, but like, what can people immediately do right now to take action to support you?
Absolutely. So we dip our wheels and we roll out of Wilmington, North Carolina on October 13th. It is a 17-day journey. It's 1,000 miles. No hurricane energy. We're at the end of hurricane season. It was really intentional with the dates and timing, like cool enough, but not too hot. We're not experienced, you know, touring cyclists. So this is interesting. But yeah, and then we finish in New Orleans. Our destination, our spot in New Orleans is Congo Square. Again, strategically thinking about the significance of, you know, just that area and the different lineage that New Orleans represents, and the losses as well. So just being very intentional over those 2-week periods. But what we need right now, most definitely, we need people talking about this event. It is, unfortunately, I lost my accounts, long story. Anyhow, it has been very hard and painful trying to get things back up and in the forefront of people's minds. But we need folks talking about what Womb Cycle is. And it is an organization that is intentionally looking to close the gap for Black infant mortality. And so that's the elevator speech right there. The event, the fundraiser, what we need is we need people to make donations. We have a team donation spot, and then we have individuals. Every cyclist who volunteers has a buy-in, so they have their own individual GoFundMe. So they're on their pictures and the links to their GoFundMes are on the website. And then we have an Amazon team list, and those are items. If I had to be honest, and I'm going to be honest, what my team needs, they need good bikes. They need bikes that are not going to cause them harm, bodily harm.
Right.
And people don't understand that. And even I didn't understand that as, you know, when I first started out, it was the beginning of COVID, you know, so I just went to Walmart, got a bike, whatever. And I trained on this bike. I did my first 50 miles on this bike, and people would roll up to me and be like, "That's very impressive." And I was like, I had no idea. Like, I'm like, yeah, you guys have nice bikes, but this works, you know? And so as I began to learn about bikes, I was like, oh, I was suffering. And I didn't know it, right? Like, you don't know what you know. And bikes are not inexpensive. Right. You know, people are volunteering their time, their energy. And the biggest gift that community could give to these folks is being on a bike that is going to be comfortable in the discomfort, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that makes absolute sense. And I'm like, my business brain is like, what's a bike manufacturer that could sponsor this, right? Like, that could be huge for them. Good exposure. Good bikes are needed. Right. Yeah.
Right.
So if anyone knows a bike manufacturer who's listening right now, and also absolutely, we can all donate. And I know that, you know, not everyone has a lot, but I'm sure $5 goes just as far as 500.
It does.
Yeah.
It really does. And in business, we all know it's the consistent $5 donations that support you, right?
Yeah. And basically you're saying by supporting you, I'm supporting reducing Black infant mortality.
You are. Like, you 100% are supporting.
Yeah.
Because those dollars that are donated are going specifically to A, getting us on the road, but B, when we get to these states with the intention of, no, we're going to talk to a representative. No, we're not going to be like, oh, this is a cool news event. No, it's not a news event, because these are real lives. These are, you know, these are losses impact a person for the rest of their life. It does not matter. I have said this 1,000 times. Whether it's early pregnancy or it's late in pregnancy, or if it was a child that reached 11 months old, a loss is a loss. And unfortunately, in our society, we like to lean in on statistics. And when we lean on that number, we take away humanity. We take away the love that somebody has for that lost baby, right? We diminish that baby as being a living, breathing being, you know? And so, yes, the statistics are on the website. That's great. But the impact of sitting with families who have had losses, many of which could have been prevented, and having a legislator or a state representative hear the voices of the unheard. Because in the work that I've done working in Colorado and doing legislative work, it did not dawn on me that legislators, no matter where they're located in the state, they are going to see legislation through their lived experience.
So if they never hear
the voices of the unheard, how can they even contemplate a change needs to happen? They can't. They can't, because all they know is their lived experience. And that was like mind blowing to me. Like, I thought that was common sense. No, they don't know what they don't know.
Yeah. And I think we could bridge that across to everything, right?
Like
working on my own white privilege, right? Like I didn't know what I didn't know. I didn't realize that Black babies were dying at a much higher rate. I knew that stillbirth happened to everyone. And then unpacking that and wait, why is this happening? And what can I do as a birth professional to help reduce it? And a big part of that is handing the mic over to people like Mimi, doing incredible work and raising awareness, because we need to be having these conversations, right? That's the first step, is even acknowledging that this is happening, raising awareness, and then getting systematic change in maternity care and in society, right? Like this is a huge systemic issue that begins with raising awareness, which is literally what you are devoted to doing. And that is amazing and incredible. And thank you.
Thank you. It is a passion of mine. And I recognize through my own lived experience and the birth of my own granddaughter, and recognizing that the work that I do, I have no intention for it to stop when I'm no longer, you know, festering on the face of this earth. You know, I want this to go on. And so we have to begin to look at, how do we do that? How do we make it so that systemic change isn't reliant on an individual person, right?
Right.
So you have to bring in multiple folks from different agency, different state, right? In order for you to really truly broadcast the gravity and the enormity of the situation. And in public health, you know, we see infant mortality as a determinant of health. Public health actually looks at the birth and death rates of every community and uses it as a determinant of health, which then poses the question, why are public health departments not ringing the bell? In my state, in my county, what I was told was, it's high and we're aware of it and we're watching. How can you stomach that? It's like, wait, you're monitoring, you're saying you're using surveillance, and you're not willing to consider an intervention? Okay, this is interesting. This is very interesting. And it wasn't until the peak of COVID when NIH, the National Institute of Health, came out and said, we need, for communities of color, we need providers in their communities. Oh, that's a first. That was like, oh, so now you want to acknowledge that community providers is the key to improving outcomes in communities of color. Wow. Okay. And I think we have forgotten that again as we wind down out of a pandemic into an endemic.
What do you think are some of those key things, including community providers, but what more would you want to see happen to reduce these heart-wrenching rates?
Right. There needs to be an effective collaboration between community providers and institutional providers.
Yeah.
You know, when we think about cultural congruency and cultural competency, when we look at it through a lens of medicine, cultural competency is no more than a check box item, right? And so does that make you a safer provider? Absolutely not, because it's an individual decision to say, I have bias, I can be having an impact on people's lives, and that doesn't make me feel good from a moral perspective, so I'm going to work on me. Most people don't do that, right? So if we want to say through evidence, which we have, that cultural congruency and being cared for by a provider that looks like you produces better outcomes, then what we need to do to sustain that is be able to provide funding so that those who are in education process of whether it's, you know, a certified nurse midwifery or if they're going to be a CPM, none of that is free. And
no.
There needs to be a pathway that is not as complicated. It's very convoluted right now to build those communities up. And then once you get the licensure, once you get the credential, which I have, then there's the obstacle of, like we talked about, getting the finances. You know, my little application, trying to figure it out compared to an organization that's been established for 10 years. They're going to get that coin. I'm not. And time is my biggest asset.
Right.
That's my biggest asset.
Yeah.
So I'm at a deficit on both ends of the spectrum, right? And so systemically, in Colorado, in my county, in El Paso County, I work outside of the confines of the institutions. I have worked really hard to develop relationships with certain providers, you know, so that we can have that congruency together and we can do those transfers of care with trust between the providers. And it's a beautiful orchestra. I cannot understand and I cannot fathom why we can't see that more widespread. Because that's the key. That is the key. When medicine is necessary, I am very thankful for it and I am open to it. But also when I'm calling a provider's office and saying, hey, I've got this mom, she's 38 weeks, she's presenting with these three manifestations of illness. Please, you know, I'm gonna send her in for a workup. And then you turn around and send her back to me. I turn around and send her back to you. You turn around and send her back to me. I turn around and send her back to you. And now we have an emergency C-section with a baby who is not tolerating well.
Mm.
This happens all the time. So in midwifery, we're proactive, right? And in obstetrics, you're not being so much proactive, you're being reactive.
Reactive because there isn't the time being spent,
right.
Whereas there is with midwifery, a lot more time being spent assessing and looking at a whole picture of health, not just labs, but hey, what does nutrition look like for you? Do you even have access? Like all of these questions that are so important, but are also can be broken down with systemic racism as well, as far as just even access. I recently heard the term food apartheid rather than food desert, because mm-hmm. there's literally in some areas not even grocery stores that weren't planned to be in certain neighborhoods to give access to whole fresh fruits and vegetables and nutrients and vitamins and things that all people need and all children need, but people need to have, you know, sustain their wellness during pregnancy too.
Right. And it doesn't seem to be a huge investment to poo-poo on public health, but it doesn't seem to be a huge investment on their end. When you look at what your public health department, your local public health department is focused on, perinatal care is not one of them.
Yeah, but obesity crisis is near the top. Yet
smoking. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, there's a lot we could unpack.
I know, right? Too. I'm like, oh, after that one, because I'm like,
right.
Okay. So yeah, like you look and it amazes me when I get, you know, there's a news alert that pops up that they've captured a rabbit, you know, coyote out in eastern Colorado, and I'm like, you captured one. How many babies died in the last week?
Wow.
How many Black babies died from birth to 12 months in the last week? Why is that not making the news? But you want to talk to me about a rabbit fox. You want to put out a health alert for a rabbit fox. I just got an alert from our local county about, like, there was one or two cases of meningitis, which is super important because it's communicable and can spread like wildfire. And I'm like, wow, such perspective. And when we think about healthy people 2020, which we, you know, kind of went by the wayside because we have COVID, you know, consuming us. So now we have new, you know, guidelines, healthy people, you know, and perinatal care is still on there. And I'm like, that's great, people. But what are you doing about it? Some of these babies could sustain life if there was a proactive management of their care taking place.
Right.
You know, some of these issues that we're seeing with the losses strictly can be prevented through education.
Yes.
Just education, yes. Just educating the mom who has the chronic blood pressure.
Mm-hmm.
Just educating. But yeah. We hear the same things, you know, providers don't have time for that. I think in the U.S., our system is set up to decide what we make time for. Mm-hmm. I see in my world, as we evolve into opening the birth center, you know, I have a vision of having a perinatal nurse coordinator like you would if you had cancer.
Yeah.
You know, like my mother had breast cancer and she had a nurse navigator who was my savior. I can't tell you how many times when things would go wrong. I can remember an incident where my mom's liver was failing and I had to call the paramedics.
Mm.
And, you know, they took her to the hospital. I got there and they're like, you can't go back. And I had this nurse navigator who I called them like, this is what's going on. They won't let me back to be with her. You know, and within minutes, somebody was out to come get me, to take me back to be with my mom.
Yeah.
You know, that was the individual who, like, you know, with cancer, they give you this binder and they give you all this information and it's so much, kind of like pregnancy, right? You get just all this information and then you start Googling. And then there was this person who was assigned to us and said, okay, so we're going to start here with basic needs.
Today's episode is sponsored by Aeroflow Breast Pumps. Did you know that your health insurance will cover the cost of a breast pump? It's true. In fact, many health insurance plans also cover milk storage bags, breastfeeding prep courses, and more. At Aeroflow Breast Pumps, you can shop top-rated pumps from brands like Medela, Spectra, and Motif without ever opening your wallet. Fill out their quick and easy insurance eligibility form and they'll take care of the rest. It might be the easiest thing you do this pregnancy. Visit aeroflowbreastpumps.com/plus-size-birth to find out why more than 1 million moms have chosen Aeroflow Breast Pumps to get their pump through insurance. And now let's get back to the show.
What are your basic needs, right? And that goes back to basic, like Maslow's hierarchy of life, like meet a person with their basic needs so they can achieve their most highest self, right? Yeah. That's so basic. Yeah. And so in my vision, you know, I see exactly what I want to do and how I want to be that model of care. And we'll get there. But for right now, it's just that intentional focused on these babies are dying for a reason.
That aftercare that happens so often postpartum in other countries, which is so incredibly important, but we don't see it happening here at all in the United States. People have to go back to work immediately and they're not able to care for themselves, you know, in anyone postpartum is able to fully heal. And if, you know, you're lactating to provide nutrition for your child, like there's just so much that's happening. People are forced to go back to work and things are missed. And yeah, there's a lot about the whole system that is very much broken and needs to be overhauled and things to be looked at. I was thinking as you were saying that the care that people receive and the crossover with, you know, higher BMI, I feel concerned that this system might come in and be like, okay, well, now since we have people dying, babies dying at higher rates, then we need more medical intervention, more oversight. So now everyone's going to need non-stress tests and all this stuff without stepping back and realizing the access to even get to those appointments, the cost of those appointments. I just see how, I don't like to use the O word, but like how obesity is treated in maternity care, almost more oversight to help reduce risk, whereas what's happening has just so elevated our cesarean birth rate. Mm-hmm. So I wonder, like, I don't know, like we need your voices and other voices of people to be like, here's the problem, here needs to be fixed, but I just worry that the system could come in and be like, okay, so now for every Black person that's pregnant, all of these extra things will happen. Maybe that needs to happen. Maybe that doesn't. What are your thoughts as I'm just talking off the top of my head? Because I hear that a lot from people in, you know, higher weights of, well, now I have to do all these extra things, which I don't even know are extra necessities. I have to take off all this time from work that I can't even afford to do that. I don't know. I'm just thinking that just came to my head there.
It makes me think of fear-based care.
Yes. Yeah.
Like it really just makes me think of fear-based care. Like, I understand, like, we look through a lens of risk factors. And we know that if you have a high BMI and chronic hypertension, you're more like, and you're Black, you're more likely to have preeclampsia, right? That's great. But you, as the provider, what is your role in that whole thing? Mm-hmm. Ordering labs is not enough. That's not the answer.
Making sure you're using the correct size blood pressure cuff needs to be the start. Yeah.
Can we say one more time for the people on the back? Because that is a huge problem.
Yeah, can
problem,
we just start there?
Right?
Yeah.
Huge, huge problem, right?
Yeah.
And so doing the test, doing the blood pressure, okay, that's not great. That's lovely. Have you asked that person, how do they feel? Have you asked that individual what they know, what they understand the illness is, and why these risk factors could possibly contribute? If you begin to have those conversations, behaviors begin to change. Behaviors don't change overnight, you know that. And it's up to the individual if they choose to make behavioral changes. Most people in pregnancy don't choose not to do something because they are thinking about their baby. So they may not be able to do all things, but there are some things that they usually will be like, I can commit to that. Mm-hmm. But if they walk into an environment where they are going to be shamed just by their sight,
right,
that is never going to happen.
You're not going to listen. We say that a lot. Like, you're not going to listen to the advice that you're given if you're being made to feel ashamed. And that's often for people of size. But if you are a Black person or an LGBTQ plus person or a person with disabilities, like, there are so many more layers and so many more biases and cumulative trauma that you're just walking into a doctor's appointment. Like, how do you navigate an unsafe space, really, when also the care provider is like, well, I'm just doing my job and providing care. Like, no, you need to unpack a lot of biases to be able to meet people where they're at, to be able to eloquently have the conversation that is an evidence-based conversation in a way that humanizes the individual sitting in front of you.
And the word humanizes, like, resonates with me so much. When I work with my families, I chuckle. They call me Black Auntie. I love it. But the conversations are so real and there's so much connection because I'm treating them the way I would want somebody to treat me or treat my daughter, right? We need to unpack what's happening here. I know that more things are unfolding. Let's peel these back layer by layer slowly. Let's do this together. And it always comes back to, we don't have time for that. We don't have time. Well, your lack of time and investment in a system, which you are contributing to, not change, is how these people continue to die. You are a contributing member. You don't get to say that you're not, because you are. As a provider, it's your job to say, okay, this is a problem. And what I am doing as an individual isn't enough. So maybe I need to change how I practice. Maybe I need to propose that we use different types of resources within my setting. You have to want to do the greatest good for the greater number of people. And I just don't see that.
And I think that that's often why people get into healthcare, but at some point that gets lost. And I've talked to OBs that are now leaving the medical system because they went in wanting to make a change and wanting to improve outcomes. And then they walked into a system where they weren't supported, overworked, and and in a toxic sometimes environment where you don't have the ability, where you have the ability to speak up, but you're pretty much told you don't.
Mm-hmm.
And so that worries me too. A lot of people leaving and not wanting to be part of the medical system when we need newer voices and energy and a belief in looking at these systemic issues that are literally causing babies and people to die, and Black babies and Black people at a much higher rate. And I mean, if it was white people dying at a much higher rate, things would look different. And that is completely messed up.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to say it.
Yeah. But it's fact. It's true. You know, when you look at a 2% death rate compared to a 4% death rate, you know, and
it's a 50% increase. Yeah. Right. When we look at the relative risk, and I always talk about relative risk versus actual risk, but when we're talking about death, like, that's a 50% increase.
Yeah. And it doesn't discriminate no matter what state you're in. And one of the things that you just said that I'm just like, oh, I'm liking this. We have to begin to put people on the spot and ask them. When they say, or when an individual says the system isn't set up that way, ask them, but what if it is? But what if it is?
Yeah.
People are so quick to be like, that's just the way. No, wait, stop. What if you could work in the environment that your heart desires and aligns with?
Yeah.
What if you could? And I think that's the push and pull that people don't recognize with community mm-hmm. providers or community midwives. I don't work within a system. By any means necessary, I don't work within a system because that's how I keep people alive. I have created systems and structures and policies and procedures along the way to help ensure that I keep people alive.
Mm-hmm.
So if we know that the system is broken and it doesn't work that way, why as a community and nation, why are we like okay with that? Why are we not saying, but what if?
Yeah.
What can we do to make it the other way?
Yeah.
People don't ask that question.
No, and it's like, you don't know what you don't know. When I first got pregnant, I was like, oh, I don't want to go to Denver Health. That's a county hospital. I want to go to Rose because I get a steak dinner in this beautiful suite. And then when I started getting care and I was like, wait, like, no, I want a medicated. And then I connected with a midwife at Denver Health that was like, oh, you're going to have plastic chairs. And you need to like not expect couches. Like, this is different, but this is amazing care. And the care I received was like worlds apart. Like, I was just like, you don't know what you don't know. Who gives a crap about a steak after giving birth? I mean, yeah, you want iron and protein, like all that. Maybe that wasn't. who cares about couches? It is about the care and the individualized care and the midwifery care. And I didn't know it and I didn't get it. And I didn't even realize the privilege I had even to go to the OB with the couches from the beginning, right? Like, I didn't see any of that or know any of that. And I didn't know anything about the differences in Black infant maternity mortality rate or even for people during pregnancy until I became a birth professional. So it's like a trickle. I say all that to share my journey. And that's why I'm so honored to have you here, Mimi, and to have this conversation, because I'm always learning and growing and wanting to do better. And I was just raised with the golden rule, do unto others as you do to yourself. Yep. And that's how I live my life. So when I found out that all this harm is happening, I'm like, well, shoot, how can I do better? And for some of us, that's, you know, pulling out your phone right now and donating $50 or $5 to WombCycle, right? And for some of us, that's even just sharing your work on social media. Like, you don't necessarily have to pull out money. It's great if you can. I mean, Starbucks now is like $6 a drink, so we can at least do 10, right? Like, spare yourself a cup of coffee, give money for something that really matters and make a difference. And then I think that next step for every individual is, as kind of like what I just shared, like, starting to look at our own privilege and our own journey and what are things that we can start unpacking about our own biases. Like, what can we do to improve things for everyone, right? Because by acknowledging systematic racism and my own biases and working to unpack that, I just think that it makes me an overall better human. Like, it enriches my life to want to learn more and do better and meet people where they're at. Like, it's, I mean, I don't, it feels weird to be like, it's wonderful, but because it's so messed up that you, that work is even there. But like, it is wonderful, right? To do the work and to continue to do the work and mess up along the way and just want to, I don't know,
be a good
just meet
person.
People where they're at. Be a good person. Is it that simple? Mimi, is it that
just be a good human? And I think that's the part that we've lost, is that we've lost humanity. We have, as a society, you know, we've seen a lot of bad things over the years and the decades. And to some degree, that has created a society that wants to invert and doesn't want to have real courageous conversations that aren't contentious. You know, people will argue, you know, well, you know, like you said, you know, there's other things, that reasons why these babies are dying. Well, you know, sadly, we have evidence. We don't need more evidence. And Black people in general, we don't owe you an explanation for our essence of being who we are. We don't owe you that.
Yeah, we don't. You don't. But I owe you me unpacking my biases and not, you know, not pretending like they don't exist, because they do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Right. Right.
Yeah. So incredibly important. And I'm always learning. Like, I watched I was looking it up when we were talking earlier to make sure I said the right documentary, the documentary Aftershock. That looks at Black infant mortality rates. And I was so moved by it and so taken aback. And so I like immediately was sharing it via my newsletter. And I had some people say, like, Jen, this is not for Black families to watch. This is trauma. And you need to be aware of that too. And not just be like, everyone needs to see this. Well, like being cognizant and careful of those conversations and like not putting more burden on Black people that have been through so much trauma, and not being like, here, watch this trauma thing. No, it's everyone who isn't aware of it. So I think that's another good resource if people want to look at this more and dig into it more. And Dr. Neil Shah, who we've had on the podcast, is also featured in the documentary, and it's really powerful. So to really dig in, like, we've had this incredible conversation with Mimi, but if you're like, wait, how is the system broken? And what are the, like, there's a documentary right there that you can watch. And I know that you have on your website, wombcycle.org, you have lots of resources there as well to dig into this more. Because for some people, this might be the first time they're really hearing this and unpacking this. And they're like, whoa. But yeah, and that you're doing the tour in some of the states that has also limited access to midwifery, which is part of the whole conversation that we've been having. And it has the highest rates of Black infant mortality and some of the lowest rates to access to midwifery, including community midwives and home birth midwives.
Yeah. And some of those communities don't even have an OB. Like, people have to drive 1 and 2 hours for care. I mean, the perinatal deserts that are in the South and Southeast, it's very real. It's very real.
Wow.
So be able to be like, I see in my future womb cycle being something that is done every state, and that there will be these pop-up perinatal clinics that can run and function and operate just off of the foundation of womb cycle. That's what I see. You know, it may take 10, 15 years to get there, and that's okay. But this is how you do grassroots work. This is how it's done. And if you don't take the input from individual communities, then you're not really doing grassroots. So that's why it was so important to be like, wait, no, you're not just going to ride your bike through here and be like, look at me. No, no, we're going to ride our bike. We're going to give voices to the unheard. We're going to put the people who make the decisions in the room. They can sit in the discomfort and we're going to get some cash.
Yes. Like,
that's how we bring change.
Yes. Yes, you are doing it. You are an incredible human. I am honored to hold space with you. Thank you for all that you've shared, all that you're doing. Please tell the listeners where they can find you, how they can support you again. And, well, I know Peloton has weight limits, but maybe I can find another bike and I can start cycling too, because, I mean, not anytime soon for a big tour, but if you're going nationwide and this is going to continue every year, I really love to walk. So maybe I could, maybe I could do a walk too, but like, I would love to, because when you were sharing the joy of being on that bike in the beginning, it brought back a lot to me. So maybe I could join you in 2026 and just get my stamina up and a good solid bike. But, I want to support you more than just emotionally and financially. Yeah. It'd be really neat to be alongside you.
And I will say, curvy girls, we do it better.
Yeah!
I will say, curvy girls, we do it better. So, there's that. And bike, let me tell you, they support our big cheeks, so.
Yeah, they got bigger seats. I know, I can buy a bigger seat.
So, I'm just saying, I've got a lot back there.
Me too.
I know. So, for all my curvy girls out there, listen, there is a bike for your body, I promise.
Yes, 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 yes.
So folks can go to wombcycle.org, that you guys can read all about how WombCycle came about, the vision. You actually can view some statistics there, and then you can see some videos that are popping up on there that we're sharing. There are event details. And if you are not in the States, you don't want to ride your bike, you don't want to be a volunteer cyclist, you can do it virtually. We have a virtual map.
Wow.
Yes, we do. So we created a virtual map and we need volunteers. We need volunteer chiropractors, nurses, massage therapists, people to help with the caravan for safety. We need volunteers. So please, please, please check out the website, see our needs, and we will be glad to have you.
Oh, well, thank you again so much. I'm excited to get involved and I just continuously want to amplify this message well beyond today, tomorrow, and continually that we need to create change. And this is important and I am just so thankful for what you're doing. So thank you, Mimi.
Thank you so much, Jen.
All right, friends. Well, let's pull out our phones now and make a donation and help to create change, because it just creates change for all. So, all right. Until next time. Bye.
Bye.